Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today, we are going to be talking about CRISPR-Cas9. That's the precise genome cutting tool of our human genome. And it's probably the most impactful advancements that we have made in a long time in science. Yeah, you can argue that the internet is major impactful. Yeah, it is. It's completely changing society. You can argue that the printing press completely changed society. But editing the human genome is on that level, and that's right on our doorstep. And they've been editing animals and plants for a while, but now with the advent of CRISPR-Cas9, they're able to edit the human genome because it's much more precise. You can't mess around with humans with something that's not that precise. Yeah, we can do research on plants. So what if it's a little off? We can do research on mice and things, and we know how we treat those small animals. But when it comes to human beings, there's a much higher level of expectations. And it makes sense, right? We don't want things to be wrong. So now that we have CRISPR-Cas9, which is able to target precisely what we're looking at, they are now working with adult stem cells and figuring out how to remove diseases, whether it's cutting out the disease sequence or replacing that particular sequence with something else. That's what they're doing. There's a lot of work going on all around the world. They're working on things such as trying to eliminate HIV and sickle cell anemia, all sorts of things. But recently, China has worked with human embryonic stem cells to try to eliminate the disease at its origination point. The criticism is as soon as you start messing around with embryonic cells, you can alter the genome permanently. So, of course, this has spawned an incredible amount of debate. What are the ethics around this? And there is no laws worldwide on how to deal with this. So we can create laws in the United States, but that doesn't do anything to stop embryonic research because we can't control the world, right? So there needs to be some worldwide things going on. And this episode, I'm inviting Dr. Gang Bao. He is the Foyt Family Chair of the Department of Engineering at Rice University and the Director of Nanomedicine Center for Nuclear Protein Machines. I know that's a big mouthful of what he's doing, but he is, let's put it in a nutshell, he is one of the world's experts on editing genomes and the CRISPR-Cas9 system. In fact, his lab, Bo Lab, was the first one in the world to identify that CRISPR-Cas9 does more than we think it's doing. When it's cutting out a sequence, it actually will cut the targeted sequence, but it will also target and cut other sequences across the entire genome that we didn't intend to cut out. So there are a lot of issues currently with our genome cutting capabilities. And he's one of the foremost in the world coming up with different techniques to be able to remedy that situation. And he's going to talk about all that and also what the ethical consequences of genome editing are, what world governments need to be doing. Also, he's going to be talking about what he thinks we will ultimately be able to do in the future with this technology. And before we all start this, he explains how it all works because most of us don't understand it. So he explains how this works at a basic level so we can get an idea and have a framework of how this can affect us and our future, which is going to be extremely impactful as this thing moves forward. And hopefully for the better, let's eliminate diseases and things. But the unethical consequences is creating all sorts of Frankenstein people or beautiful people or You dream it, they can do it. So let's get into this interview with Dr. Gang Bo. Hello, Bo. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice talking with you.
You are doing fantastic research into a really, really interesting topic, and I am really excited to have you here. What are you currently working on, and what are we currently able to do with the human genome?
Right. So the idea is to precisely modify the human genome. So the whole field is called genome editing, which is very, very exciting. So basically, it starts from engineering a nano scissors, or it's called engineered nuclease, which is really a molecular scissors that cuts the genome at a predefined location. So that's very important, because otherwise you would have a random changes of the genome. But in our case, we want to modify the genome precisely, right? So
is this the CRISPR system, or is it something else?
So there are three different types of engineered nuclease. The first is the zinc finger nuclease, or ZFNs. The second is tau effector nuclease, or TALENs. The third is CRISPR-Cas9, right? So, but nowadays, of course, not only me, but many people in the field believe CRISPR-Cas9 is the most effective cutting tool.
And why is it the most effective cutting tool? Because you can be more precise, or it's less expensive and precise, or why?
Well, that's a good question. So typically we evaluate those tools with two things. One is how effectively it cuts the genome, right? So the idea is that if you define a location, let's say you have roughly you have 100 million cells, a lot of cells. So you deliver CRISPR-Cas9 into those cells. Assuming you have a very high delivery efficiency, then you measure what is the percentage of cells having the specific cut, right? So that's how we define the efficiency. The second thing is how specific it is, right? So if it is very specific, then, of course, it's more useful. If it's less specific, then there are issues. The issue is that in some cases, you define a specific location. Let's say the CRISPR-Cas9 cuts at that location, but it may also cut at other locations, and we call those as off-target cutting. Right.
And can you identify that when you're doing it, or is it something that you don't know?
That's a great question. So the challenge is that you have a whole genome, right? So in theory, the CRISPR-Cas9 can cut at many, many locations. It's very hard to predict exactly where are the off-target sites, right? Although over the last few years, not only us, but many other groups have developed tools trying to predict where exactly are those off-target sites. But the problem is that usually it's not that accurate, right? So the tools are not that accurate yet.
Oh, because it's almost not usable until they're really accurate. I mean, you can use it on plants and animals and things that you're doing research on, but to use it on humans before it's really accurate is kind of scary, isn't it?
It is, because I can give you one example. We have been working on CRISPR-Cas9 based strategy for treating sickle cell disease. Sickle cell disease is caused by AT mutation, it's a point mutation in beta globin gene, right? So the idea is to fix this mutation in stem cells, HSCs, as a way to generate healthy red blood cells instead of sickle cells. Now, in doing so, we have to cut the beta globin gene near the mutation I just mentioned. But there are two issues. One is, as we just discussed, there might be some off-target cutting that is specific cutting, but in other genes, other locations, right? So even the on-target cutting, if not repaired, or if repaired with the non-homologous interjoining pathway on HGJ, then that may cause issues. For example, a possibility is the cutting would cause beta thalassemia, which is a different disease.
Yeah, you can create other diseases by cutting in wrong places. But can you fix it when you cut? If you know that it cut in a wrong place, can you actually fix that?
It's possible, but it's not that easy. So let me just again give you some examples. Let's see if the CRISPR-Cas9 cuts a different gene, right? So that may cause a deletion because at the predefined location, let's say there is a cut. At a different location, there's another cut, right? So you have two cuts now. And the segment of the gene between the two cuts may be deleted.
Oh.
This could be a pretty large deletion. And to fix this deletion would be very difficult.
Well, why does it not go to exactly where we want it to? Why does it go to other cuts? Are there genes that are so similar that it can't distinguish the difference?
Yes, exactly. So there are three possibilities. So first, let's say if you select a specific sequence, right? So usually, the most common CRISPR-Cas9 system we use is called SP-Cas9. So that we target a 20 base sequence in the genome. Now, in addition to the gene you want to cut, which has this 20 base sequence, you may have the same sequence, exact same sequence in other genes, right? So number one. Number two, you may have 20 base sequences that are similar to this predefined sequence. So that means the length of the sequence is the same, 20 base, right? But in other locations in the genome, there are many, many similar sequences.
That's what makes it so complicated, because you could have the same sequence, but in this location it does this to you, but in this location it might do something completely different.
Exactly, because this exact sequence, for example, may occur in a different chromosome, right? Or in the same chromosome, but in a different gene. And so this itself is an issue, but a bigger issue is you may have many similar sequences. By similar, I mean, let's say you have a 20 base sequence of which 19 bases have exact match, right? Leaving one base we call mismatch, right? You may have 18 bases that have exact match, but leaving two bases mismatched, right? So then you can go on and go on. You can have quite a few of those mismatched bases, but have enough similarity that CRISPR-Cas9 could still cut.
Well, how do you get past that? How do you do an exact placement of what you're trying to do? Or is that the question? You don't know how yet.
Yes, it's a challenge. We do not have a perfect solution yet, because whatever you do, the mismatch, the sequences are there. And there are two other cases. Let me just explain. So what I just mentioned is the case that you have sequences have exact same length, 20 bases, let's say, but having mismatched the bases. But you may also have sequences that, let's say, 19 base match, then the original target sequence has 20 base, right? So there's one base short. But even though there's one base short, but still CRISPR-Cas9 can cut. So my lab is the first to discover this. And also the other case is true, that is, you have somewhere you have 21 bases, but of the 21 bases, the 20 base sequence has a exact match, right? That leaves one base longer, right? And so in both cases, either you have one or more bases shorter, or one or more bases longer in the genome, if you search the sequences. We call those either DNA bulges or RNA bulges. In those cases, CRISPR-Cas9 can still cut.
So CRISPR will look for whatever sequence that you're telling it to look for, but it'll also look for, or it'll also cut sequences that are just off by one from what you specified.
Or even some cases, even two, right?
Or even two. And your lab identified that that's what it's doing, because people didn't know that it was doing that, and you figured that out?
No, before people only, before our results, so people typically believed that only sequences that have so-called base mismatches that could be off-target cutting site. But in our case, we identified those RNA or DNA bulges. We call this bulge tolerance. So we indicated that even with one base shorter or one base longer, those sequences can still be cut.
Well, that's a huge finding that you found. Now, could you theoretically say, okay, I'm looking for this sequence, but I'm looking for it in this placement in the genome? So you have to give it more intelligence of not just this pattern recognition, but also it this placement of this pattern.
Yes. So what we do, we developed a tool called CosMate. So the tool does is to search the whole genome. Let's say you identify a 20 base sequence to target, to cut. So the tool searches the whole genome to identify similar sequences that CRISPR-Cas9 may cut. So we call those as potential off-target sites. The tool also ranks all those off-target sites, could be, let's say, 200 sites, could be 300 sites, could be 500 sites that potentially CRISPR-Cas9 could cut, right? So we rank them, because otherwise, let's say you have 500 potential off-target sites, you would have to check one by one to see which one is the true off-target site, because what the tool does is really to make a prediction, but it's not necessarily true that the prediction is accurate, right? So we rank them so that people could have a better idea how to confirm. But the problem is the ranking itself is not accurate, right? So one potential issue is that, let's say we rank the off-target sites. So people may think, okay, let me just check the top 10 highly ranked top 10 sites. Then I can do PCR to check. But the problem is the true off-target sites may not be among the top 10, right? Maybe ranked, let's say, 110, 120, right? So then whatever results you have by only check the top 10 may not be useful.
Because it might be the 499th one that was the second site that was cut.
Exactly. So
is there a way, though, to identify that sequence in a particular location so there's no way it could cut the wrong one? Or at this point, you haven't identified what those characteristics are yet?
So far, actually, it's I would say it's impossible to identify a particular site that does not have any similar sites. And
but is it on a specific location on the genome, though, always? Or can it be random? Like, if you're looking for a specific disease and a sequence, is it always on the same place on the genome, or is it in different locations?
Ah, that's a different question. So it depends. If you want to fix a mutation, right, that causes a disease, then you would have to cut at a location near this mutation.
But is that mutation always in the same place in the genome?
Well, it depends on the disease. So that's a great question. So for sickle cell disease, yes, it is always the same mutation at the same location.
Well, then in that way, can you program the CRISPR to go to that specific location and look for that specific sequence so that it can't mess up?
Yes, you can. That's usually what we do, is to identify a specific sequence near that mutation. But as I mentioned, the problem is in the genome, you could have many similar sequences
right by that location.
CRISPR-Cas9 can still cut, and not at this location.
Oh, but CRISPR-Cas9 can't necessarily just go to a single location yet. It doesn't have that power.
Not yet.
Okay, we're looking for. Okay.
Right. Although over the last few years, people in the field have been doing a lot of great work trying to make the CRISPR-Cas9 system more specific. But still, no one could claim that absolutely there's no off-target cutting.
Well, until you can verify that, you can't use it on humans yet, right? Because otherwise we could be growing ears out of our behind or something.
It's a question that we have to answer, because having off-target cutting does not necessarily mean that would cause a disease, right? So we have to define safety. We have to define what cases, although there are still locations that we have off-target cutting, we have to define in what cases we can say it's safe. For example, in the whole genome, there are coding sequences, there are also non-coding sequences, right? So if the cut is in a non-coding sequence region, right, or in the intron region, the off-target cutting may not be a big issue, right? Also depends on the specific location. Even if the cutting is in the coding region, depends on what exactly is that protein, right? So if the cutting location is the oncogene, then that's dangerous, right? You may induce cancer, right? Or as I mentioned, if the off-target cutting would cause a deletion of a large chunk of the genome, or causes inversion or other large-scale chromosomal changes, then those would be very dangerous, right? But it's possible that off-target cutting is not so dangerous.
Well,
how can we evaluate that? How can we define how safe the approach is? I think we still have a long way to go.
Well, because you can't just grow people and find out, oh, yeah, that didn't work. You can't
right, exactly.
Do that.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment.
How would you like to release your stress and let go of your anxiety, fear, depression, or even physical pain? How would you like to feel more relaxed, more confident, and experience more success in all areas of your life? Dave Dodge from Stress Buster Radio has a number of cutting-edge methods that will help you do just that. For more information on how Dave can help you release stress, visit StressBusterRadio.com. Skype and phone sessions available.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Were you hurt on the job or in a car accident and now struggling with pain? Shalom's Pharmacy can help. We work with you and your doctor to meet your specific needs. We also work with your doctor to keep you from developing an addiction. At Shalom's Pharmacy, we listen to your needs, get to know you, and provide the kind of personal advice that has a positive impact on your well-being. Shalom's Pharmacy, your partner in good health, located at 1106 Avenue K in Brooklyn, New York. Give us a call, 718-253-4900.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are talking to Dr. Gang Bo about editing the human genome. Fascinating discussion. But before we get back into that, I want to tell you where you can hear my shows. You can go, well, of course, to my website, which has articles and all sorts of information at sarahwestall.com. But you can also hear it on 90-plus different podcast stations, channels, whatever. And it streams live on many different channels as well, Transformation Talk Radio being one. But it also is up on YouTube. I'm putting out more popular shows up on YouTube, but Transformation Talk Radio is publishing all my shows on YouTube, so you can find it there as well. And it plays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on WBLQ in New York, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. And now it plays nationally at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star satellite radio system, which I'm very excited about. It's on their most popular channel with some of the country's most popular hosts. So you can get my show almost anywhere. But of course, go to my website where you can find different articles and things that go with the show. Let's get back into this fascinating discussion with Dr. Gang Bo.
Well, because you can't just grow people and find out, oh, yeah, that didn't work. You can't
do that. Exactly. That's what happened in the field of gene therapy, right? And as you may know, quite a few years ago, there was a case, specific case, that doctors trying to use gene therapy to treat a disease, but the patient died, right?
Yes.
And we need to avoid that. We need to avoid the case that we think, aha, I can use genome editing to treat a patient, let's say, with sickle cell disease. But if we are not careful, if the genome editing-based approach either causes a disease or even worse, causes the death of a patient, that would be a big, big issue, right?
So can you alter the genome in a live person and then from there on the cells just start replicating without that sequence in it? Or does it have to? Yeah, and so it doesn't have to start with an embryo. You can do it in a person who's a full-grown adult.
Yeah, yes, indeed. So again, using sickle cell disease as an example, right? So what we try to do, and some other groups are still also trying to do, but we still need to, again, confirm it's safe and confirm it has a high efficacy. So what we are trying to do is not just doing cutting, is to fix the mutation. The question, how to fix the mutation, right? Because cutting itself may induce mutations and small deletions, right? So what we do is to use a DNA sequence we call a template, a donor template, which has no mutation, right? So it's a wild-type sequence, and we want to use this donor sequence. It's a donor DNA sequence to replace the segment that has a mutation.
Oh, so you cut out that mutated one and insert one that doesn't have a mutation. The genome won't be altered. It'll be the same size. You're not deleting anything. You're just replacing it. Well, you're deleting and replacing.
This particular case, yes, it's actually not to delete that sequence to replace it. So cells have this ability to take the sequence, the donor sequence you supply, and using that to replace the sequence that you cut, which has a mutation, right?
Sure. It's a mutation for itself because it's different.
Right. It's a mutation that the patient has in his or her genome, but we want to replace that sequence through a process called homology directed repair, or HDR.
That's incredible. So, but now take that a couple steps further. Okay. So if we can take a sequence, a genome that's different, and insert it in, and you can insert it into an adult. So now how long would it take for that cell to reproduce and become all over the place? You know what I mean? So that yes.
Yeah, yeah. So in adults, so what we do, again, using sickle cell disease as an example, what we do is to actually modify stem cells. So in the body, we have specific stem cells that are responsible for producing all the cells in the blood, right? So because sickle cell disease is a blood disease, it's a disease that causes sickle cells instead of having normal red blood cells, right? So in this particular case, what we want to do is we modify those stem cells outside the body. We basically take out a fraction of those stem cells, we modify them outside the body by delivering CRISPR-Cas9 together with a donor template, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, once we fix a mutation in those stem cells, we select those stem cells that having, we call gene correction, then only deliver those stem cells back, and the gene-corrected stem cells would produce healthy red blood cells instead of sickle cells, right? But the truth is after we isolate a fraction of those specific stem cells from, let's say, bone marrow, we need to damage the rest. because otherwise whatever remaining in the patient would compete with so-called gene-corrected stem cells.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm wondering. So you have to damage the other ones so they can't compete anymore, and then the good ones take over.
Exactly. So, but the challenge is the good ones, number one, how to select the good ones, because one challenge is that of the cells that we isolate, we take out from the patient, we try to modify them. The efficiency is not 100% yet, right? Let's say we can achieve 20% or 30%, but that means there are still 70-80% of cells that do not have the correction, right? So if we deliver back the whole amount, the cells that do not have the correction would compete with cells that have the correction, right?
So you have to get it to a point where you have a significant amount that correct properly before it's going to actually work the way you want.
Yes, either we can increase the efficiency so that the majority of the stem cells we isolate have the correction, or we can select the gene-corrected stem cells, expanding them before putting them back to the patient, right? Either way will work, but we are still
trying to figure that out.
Exactly, yes.
So do you foresee this once you, because you know what the problems are, you now have a path forward. Do you foresee this being a viable solution to taking care of most of our diseases?
I would not claim we can use this to treat most of our diseases. I would say for some diseases like sickle cell disease, it is possible that, let's say, 10 years down the road, maybe sooner, that we can use this in a clinic to treat patients.
Well, why wouldn't we be able to change in an embryo or in a, you know, before a person is developed, why wouldn't we be able to cut out diseases?
That's a great question. Of course, I wish we could do that. So it's possible. That is, at that stage, if we know exactly what is the cause of the disease, let's say it's a genetic defect that causes the particular disease, right? Then if we can modify the embryo to fix the genetic defect as a way to treat the disease, that would be the best. The problem is, as I mentioned, we may have off-target cutting, or even at so-called on-target sites, that's the location that we want to cut. If the cut is not repaired properly, we actually may cause a disease. That is, in treating a disease, we may cause a disease. For example, we may cause cancer, right? Which could be even more dangerous than the original disease.
So we just don't quite know what we're doing yet. We don't really know how these things interact. We don't know. I mean, you're just at the very beginning stages of just trying to figure out what this actually causes and things. But you foresee a path of us being able to figure this out.
For some particular diseases, I think we will be able to figure it out, and we will be able to use CRISPR-Cas9 to treat the disease. Actually, let me see. Broadly, there are four different things that we can do in terms of treating a disease. The first, we can simply cut the particular sequence to disrupt the gene as a way to treat a disease, right? So just one cut, we do not need to use the donor template just to disrupt the particular gene as a way to treat a disease. So that's the simplest. The second approach is to generate two cuts, predefined locations for these two cuts than to delete a segment of the gene as a way to treat the disease. The third approach is to, as I mentioned, is to generate a cut at a specific location, then to use a donor template to fix the gene defect as a way to treat the disease. The fourth format is to insert a new gene. Let's say the disease is caused by missing a gene, right? We can insert a whole gene as a way to treat the disease. So there are four different formats. So it depends on the particular disease. But in each case, we still need to make sure it's safe, and we still need to make sure it is effective, right?
Well, could we possibly take a smart person and figure out what genes make them smart, delete out of someone who's not as smart, and then put in smart person genes, and suddenly that person's a lot smarter?
Yes, in theory, yes, we can do that. Again, but the problem is as we are trying to do that, if we cannot fix the issue with off-target cutting, then the off-target cutting may cause a disease. You are trying to make someone more beautiful, more smart, right? Smarter and more beautiful, right? But at the same time, if you cause a disease, that defeats the purpose.
Well, we created a smarter, more beautiful person with cancer who was going to die in 6 months.
Exactly.
So we have a lot of issues yet. Well, we don't want to create designer babies. I was just wondering whether we, you know, because next thing you know, we have all these Frankenstein humans walking around, and there's huge ethical issues with this, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So what if also the question, what if an evil person, right, takes your technology, right, to do bad things? What if that were the case, right?
Well, there's psychopaths all over. There's a certain percentage of the world are psychopaths, and there's nothing we can do. And so how do we keep powerful technology like this out of the hands of psychopaths? Doctor Strange on Batman, you know? How do we
exactly, exactly. So there is a safety issue. Of course, there are also ethical issues, right? And so I would see for treating specific diseases using CRISPR-Cas9, it could be very, very beneficial, right? Of course, a lot of diseases, so far we have no good way to treat those diseases. If we can use CRISPR-Cas9 to treat those diseases, that's a great thing. That will benefit the mankind. But we still need to be very, very careful at this stage to modify human embryos because, again, there are safety issues, there are ethical issues, right?
Well, and in the United States, we're much more strict on that, on this stuff. But in other countries, I know China's been doing a lot more research and actually been doing research with embryos and trying to implement different things, and they've had some bad results, haven't they?
Exactly. About 2.5 years ago, there was a paper published. A group in China, they modified human embryos as a way to treat beta thalassemia. The experiment itself failed, but the bigger issue is the fact that they were trying to modify human embryos, right?
And they had a lot of effects that they weren't expecting.
Exactly. So they discovered, number one, it was not so effective. Number two, of course, again, this may cause off-target cutting, and that could cause a disease or diseases. So that triggered a huge debate what we should do. So, for example, the U.S. Now has a general agreement or understanding that at this stage we should not try to modify human embryos. But of course, not every country will follow that, right? And
or they don't have the control over it either, because you can just do it in a lab, right?
Exactly, exactly. So if a lot of places are trying to do that, then that's dangerous. To me, that's a huge risk.
Well, you can have the Dr. Moreau Island, and you just can't control it.
Right. Exactly. So the question is, what is the implication for a long-term effect on human genome, right? Because the change of human genome is through many, many million years of evolution, right? And if we use, let's say, CRISPR-Cas9 to quickly generate modifications in the human genome and changes accumulate, right? What if that causes some dramatic changes of the genome, right? Then what?
Well, we don't know what we're doing. We're smart enough to destroy ourselves. We don't know what we're doing.
Exactly.
And so we have to be really smart going forward. And I don't know how this is a difficult situation, because the ethical scientists, you want them to be able to do, you don't want to shut them down. You want them to go forward, explore, research, do everything they can with the new science and figure it out. The problem is you have the unethical ones that you can't trust what they're going to do. And the implications could be enormous.
Right. Even with the diseases that we want to treat, and I believe we can treat, before we can move this to clinical practice, we still need to make sure it is safe, right?
Yeah, you have to make, like you said, if we make change after change after change, what does that do eventually to, we don't know what a number of changes in a row does. Like one change, okay, we can look, but what happens when you look at multiple changes?
So for somatic cells, it's less a issue because those cells die, right? And those, whatever changes we make will not pass to the future generations. But if we modify embryos, then that's a danger, right?
Oh, I see. And modifying an embryo will permanently change that genome. Modifying an adult human stem cell just changes it, and it doesn't go, it's not going to go to their offspring.
Exactly.
That's why,
as I mentioned, at this stage, it's just too high a risk to modify human embryos without knowing all the consequences.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing. So you can,
right.
we've messed up enough stuff when we go out there with our science, and we can tell with our bodies the way that we are affected by just different things now, let alone going around and messing around with the genome that we, the problem is you can't just experiment and see what it does. You know, it because it could permanently alter it.
Exactly. So that's why we need to be very cautious, very careful at this stage. I would say it's premature to modify human embryos at this stage. We need to learn a lot more. We need to have a much better understanding before we move on to do something like that.
So in general, we have a worldwide agreement to not mess around with human embryos at this point?
No, we don't.
We don't. And so that's what we need at this point.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Because if we don't do that, we all, an innocent person in another country can be affected by what somebody else does in some country in South Asia.
Yes. Indeed. Because again, the consequences could be huge, right?
And we could create a new disease that we've never had.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely will never go away, and it affects everybody.
Exactly.
A new mutation that is not intended or wanted.
Exactly. Exactly. We can cause actually a lot diseases if we are not careful enough.
We could probably be pretty good at that.
Well, that's a danger, right?
I know. We probably would be better at creating things that we didn't want than getting rid of things until we really understand it.
Exactly. We need to do a lot more work. Also, we need to have a good way to reverse the process. What if we make a mistake? We want to correct the mistake, right?
Yes, we definitely need that, because how else do you do research?
And I'm going to apologize, but this full interview will not be able to air live on the radio. I don't have enough time, but you can always hear this on podcast. I am going to have this particular episode up on YouTube. I think there'll be a lot of interest in this there. And it will also, the whole episode will play on the satellite radio, Global Star Satellite, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. So you'll be able to hear the whole interview there as well. I have a little bit more time on the satellite. So I hope everyone has an absolute fantastic day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.